something went on here, something went on there. And
tonight on TNT,
we review the iPhone 6 launch.
We play Two Truths and a Lie.
And we revisit some classic Canadian commercials in a game called Canady 80s. Coming up right now on TNT.
Hello, Jonathan. How are you doing?
Jeremy Taggart picked up the phone when I called so we can start the show.
Ooh, nice. We should do a little 1-2 punch acoustic stuff.
If you're Bono, let's get right to it. If you're Bono, yeah. Let me rephrase that. If I'm Bono, I would be face down on a beach in Ibiza because I won. What's wrong with tapping out? What's wrong with selling a squillion records, taking the money and running and laughing your way into the sunset?
I think it's the classic example of number one, fame. Bono loves his fame. Number two, money. Those guys roll hard, like that beach in Ibiza.
They do.
The beach in Ibiza usually comes with the big yacht, and then, you know, when they go to a city, even if it's like Bono and I guess Edge, but if they go to a city, it's like they go, it's a floor of a hotel they got to take out, and it's just, there's so much money going on, houses around the world. They're
Bono vision.
Rolling on just a monthly nut that we can't even bear to imagine.
We're obviously talking about the Apple iPhone 6 deal that they had today, and they trotted out the Bono of it all. But I have a theory that at a certain point at that level, there just isn't enough money in the world. Because like you say, if you have the house in LA, you need the beach house in Malibu, you need the place out east in New York, you need the place in the Hamptons, you need staff at all those places, you need vehicles at all those places. I remember seeing an article where, you know, it was like Harrison Ford and Jim Carrey make $20 million in a movie, but if you break it down after they pay all their people, I think they make about minimum wage.
It's crazy. So and the other thing
is that why Bono's in the spotlight still in this Apple thing?
Well, yeah, they do. When U2 tour, they do the big show where, you know, I know they've tried to break it down and make more money, but like they have done in the past, like from Achtung Baby to the Pop Mart tour, where, you know, they're like breaking even on these massive shows.
By the way, Achtung Baby, I get. Pop, I didn't get.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying the bigger, the just trying to fill a stadium, having a big show along with it, they just spend a lot of money with making it. So I think it's just that roller coaster as at that point again, where they probably need to turn the wheel again and get the cash flow going.
But why can't they just play a Bonnaroo every year? Keep your overhead down. Just do a few festivals in the summer.
That's like a feasible. You and I can understand that. Like, you know, how can you not live on a few hundred grand? You know, like sort things, and you're loving it and having a good time. But when you're rolling at like a million or $2 million a month on a nut, that's you got to keep making money.
Is it U2 that pays their sound guy as an equal fifth member, or is it the guitar tech?
No, it's their manager, Paul McGinnis.
He makes equal.
Yeah, well, I think he's stepped down or something like that.
Yeah, because he was smart. He tapped out.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, those guys, I don't know. I mean, I can't fathom that kind of lifestyle. Just the, it's hard enough for me to kind of keep my stomach when I'm in Los Angeles and I see how big the houses are with the cars and just the multiple, the mass amount of bling that's going on every level, from clothes to everything inside the house. It's just ridiculous. It's just, I don't know how you can,
I love the stars that drive their Lamborghinis to lunch at the Ivy and then complain about the paparazzi. Get a ladder, move to Idaho and shut your mouth.
Oh, there. And so U2 they gave their new album for free on iTunes. So that's like a guaranteed way for Bono to get a number one record.
So, I mean, that's not about the dough then? Or did iTunes pay an outrageous amount to them?
It's about the promo, not the dough.
Right.
The promo dollars of rolling out with Apple. Think about that. Like, just how many more optimum hits you get with your brand when you're going out with Apple on your deal. Like, you're part of the great stuff. It's the S and the S Plus or whatever it is, the iPhone 6 coming out with the bigger 6S or whatever, but then they have a free U2 album, and they also have a watch, whatever the hell that is, right. An iWatch. You imagine the iWatch? Did you see this thing?
No.
It's basically a watch that has all the ideas of what your iPad can do or whatever, all the little things from email to Skype.
Wow.
I can't imagine the hipsters now with the iWatch. I'm punching the air just thinking about it.
I know. Corporateness and what have you. Speaking of hipsters.
It's funny. It's like they're hipsters are like, they're largely, the whole thing is trying to be different. And yet, like, Apple, it couldn't be more the same of everybody. Yet they all want it. And yet, I don't understand how they somehow still can reach out to the hipsters.
I've been eligible for upgrades over the last several years, and I've given them all to my wife, who loses her phone, I'm going to say conservatively, on a weekly basis. So I'm still rocking an iPhone 4. When they were talking about the 6, the rumor was it was going to be solar charging. Was that part of the announcement?
Yeah, I didn't hear anything about that. I heard the 6S, the bigger one, has an extra battery option. So I didn't hear anything about wireless battery. I thought that was going to be an option.
Crazy.
But, alas, no, it's just Bono.
Hey, I figured something out, speaking of hipsters, and I don't think I'm wrong. It is reminiscent of the Ray Parker Jr. Ghostbusters lawsuit.
Yeah.
Have you heard this Sam Smith song, Stay With Me?
Yes, we actually, I noticed this on Twitter that you had a tweet, and I just tweeted the same exact thing of like the fact that it's I Won't Back Down, but slower.
It's
and
the
just more
same
mellow.
Song.
Yeah, no, I know. This isn't the first time where Tom Petty has been stung by a band.
Well, wait 1 second. Did you tweet that independently of me, or did you?
I actually tweeted, "Hey Sam Smith, I liked Stay With Me the first time when it was Tom Petty and yes, exactly.
Come
pretty
on.
Much what you worded. Yes.
Today?
No, like 2 weeks ago when I heard the song, I was like, God, no. I can't stand it. I think it was the day after the Grammys or whatever it was.
Oh, that's really funny. I had no idea. I certainly wouldn't have jacked your sentiment.
Well,
but
yeah,
it's so blatantly obvious.
It is. And it's just, I think that seems to be the thing these days, is people will hear a tinge of something familiar from the past, and it becomes, oh yeah, that's cool. Like that Lana Del Rey song, The West Coast, like the big hook in it is pretty much Edge of 17 by Stevie Nicks.
So where does Inspired By become flagrantly stealing?
Well, I remember Tom Petty, because it was at the Last Dance with Mary Jane song, and the Chili Peppers pretty much copied it exact. And he was just like, said he was too lazy. He's like, whatever, I know it's the same, but who cares? And
which I'm Chili Peppers song sounds like that?
It's that subba-dooba, da-ba-dooba-dooba, zibba-dooba-dooba, da-ba-dooba-dooba.
Oh, yeah.
It's exactly the same. Exactly the same.
Right.
Yeah. It's the same as the Last Dance with Mary Jane.
Crazy.
Literally. Yeah. So it's totally, and he was like, yeah, whatever, man. I don't have time for this. Who cares? Chili whippers.
You bunch of chili whippers. Hey,
yeah,
we have
whatever.
A lot to talk about today on TNT. Let's take a break and we'll get right into it.
All right.
Hang on.
Let me ask you this right quick. You know what I mean?
Welcome back to Taggart and Torrance.
Hi, Jonathan. I'm Jeremy Taggart.
Jeremy, Jonathan Torrance here. I'm really excited for this game.
Me too.
My wife and I played it on our first date, and it's a great get-to-know-me icebreaker. It's called Two Truths and a Lie. And the way it works, it's very simple. You read three statements. Two of them are true. One of them is a lie.
Love it.
How do you feel about your two truths and a lie that you've prepared?
I feel pretty good about them. I've prepared enough that they have story and they also have good selection and they're all believable.
Okay. Who's going mind. First?
Since you brought the wonderful game into the TNT frame, let's let you go first.
Okay. My first concert was Charlie Pride. I took ballroom dancing for 2 years. I have the JonoVision logo tattooed on my ankle.
Okay.
My first concert was Charlie Pride. I took ballroom dancing for 2 years. I have the JonoVision logo tattooed on my ankle.
And only one of these is a lie.
Two truths and a lie.
I'm gonna guess that the tattoo is the lie.
That's correct.
Nice.
I don't have the JonoVision logo tattooed on my ankle. My first concert was Charlie Pride at the Sherwood Sportsplex in 1979. I snuck in through the Zamboni door.
Nice.
In time to hear the crystal chandelier. Lights up that the paintings on the wall. And I did take ballroom dancing for 2 years in junior high. It was one of those we need more guys things. And I figured if they need more guys, there must be a lot of girls there looking for dance partners.
And it worked out for you, didn't it?
It worked out okay. I had really big feet and narrow ankles. Not two left ones or anything, but it worked out okay.
It was okay.
Yeah.
You didn't meet too many nice ladies.
Well, it didn't steer me in a different career path, that's for sure.
Yeah, not like our boy Mario Lopez.
I mean, I kind of misfired socially on a couple of things. One is I started playing classical guitar when I was 5 or 6, and nobody wants to sit around and listen to Andante Allegro.
Yeah, no, they don't.
And ballroom dancing is kind of nerdy, too. I should have taken hip-hop. And what are the cool instruments that kids play? Like the harmonica.
The drums, dude.
Yeah, I know, the drums.
Yeah. But you kind of had that going. You even had, I guess you felt like, I've been there, done that with the drums.
But you can't sit around the campfire and play the drums.
What do you think the cavemen did? That's all they did.
I suppose that's true.
You ever been to Africa, bud?
And they could wheel birds, the cavemen.
Yeah, man, like you go anywhere where they have campfires, there's eventually guys hitting drums if it's culturally there long enough.
I suppose that's true.
Yeah, for sure. In a good
places
way.
Places like Africa and Port Hope.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, let me give you my
all right, hit me.
Two truths and one lie.
All right, hit me.
I've met Neil Young. I've met Bob Dylan. I've met Mick Jagger.
Wow, only one of those is a lie.
Only one of those is a lie.
That's really impressive.
I've met Neil Young. I've met Bob Dylan. I've met Mick Jagger.
Neil Young and Mick Jagger somehow are more plausible to me. I'm going to say Dylan is the lie.
Nice, you got it. Yeah, Dylan is like the Black Panther of music. You have to...
Doesn't happen.
Just rare, very rare. But Neil Young is pretty rare. And I've met him a couple times.
Where did you meet Neil Young?
First time was a film festival party, I think at Much Music. Elliot Roberts was there. And I'm well-versed on Neil Young enough to know enough about what Elliot Roberts to think that was cool enough to meet Elliot Roberts. So I started talking to Elliot Roberts about anything and just respecting him and just thought he was just amazing. The fact that he was part of that culture of people that kind of cultivated these artists like, you know, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young and Joni Mitchell and these people with David Geffen, just doing all that amazing actual work with artists and developing them and helping each other. Just really cool stuff. So I started talking to him about that and he was cool enough to go to Neil and bring Neil over to the conversation, which was a great way to get in with somebody if you can get through like the gatekeeper of all, and that would be Elliot Roberts. So Elliot was like, hey Neil, come on over and meet this guy. And we were talking for you know, a couple, you know, I don't know, 20 minutes or so. And it was just really exactly who you thought he would be. And I think a month or two later, we played that Live 8 show in Toronto, and he was there. And
did he remember you?
Yeah, he remembered me, and I got to actually stand on stage and sing Rockin' in the Free World and O Canada with him. I think they did like an encore, everybody sing along kind of deal. So
what
it was
do you
pretty,
talk about with Neil Young?
You just hang out, you know, you just enjoy stuff. You don't flood people like that with questions, you know.
So it wasn't like the Chris Farley show.
Yeah, which is brilliant, you know, remember that, you're awesome, remember this. But, you know, I just thought he was one of those guys exactly like you think he would be, and just a genuine, honest, nice guy. And Mick Jagger, I didn't spend too much time with, but we played a show with them in Moncton with the Stones, and I guess the only real conversation was him telling us how full the house was and how excited he was about that. And it was like 80,000 people at $150 a ticket for concerts.
So what was he excited about? A crowd that size?
Yeah, he was just thinking of the dollars, man. He's like, nice house out there, isn't it? Just like, look at the people. It's just the dollar signs.
So did he do that as a drive-by shouting when he's walking past your dressing room?
Well, no, they like kind of, as they do meet, like they do very rarely do meet and greets or anything, but if they do, they just kind of walk through the room, say hi, quick little chat as they're walking by, quick couple pictures, boom, and they're kind of out the door. And
were there any weird, like, oh, there's Charlie's English breakfast tea, or like, did you get to see their rider?
No, they came from their dressing rooms, but I heard hilarious stories of like how Keith just has like grilled cheese and tomato sandwiches, like that's his staple.
That's,
you know,
it.
When he's just that, he and whatever else that he ingests. Charlie, I spoke to Charlie about jazz and drummers and stuff. He was amazing. It was really cool to chat with him. But Mick was just kind of all business, just as you'd think. Very, really frail. Looks like Lovey Howell or something.
A little wisp
from Gilligan's Island.
What's but man, that? Can he can shake it.
Yeah, no, for sure. They did have like the slope stage though, so they kind of had to move to the front. I'm not kidding. That's not a joke.
When I interviewed Ellen Page a few years ago for on the Q CBC radio show, and yeah. I've known Ellen for a long time. I met her when she was a kid working on Pit Pony, and then she was in Trailer Park Boys, of course, briefly as Jim Leahy's daughter. So I've known her for a long time and get to ask questions that you've always kind of wondered. This was just after her Oscar run for the movie Juno.
Mm-hmm.
So I was saying, like, is it weird when you're suddenly thrust into this galaxy where you're Johnny Depp's and you're, you know, the biggest stars in the world? I can't remember who was gunning for Oscar glory that year, but there was like some Julia Roberts's and
crazy.
A couple of Denzel's.
Yeah.
And I said, is that weird? Like, do you ever stop having the running monologue in your head? Like, this is so weird. That's Denzel. And she said the really weird thing is when it stops being weird, and then it's just like, morning, Johnny. Can you pass me a piece of muffin, Denzel? And it's just life. So when you were chatting with Neil Young, did that monologue ever stop? Or is there always a little part of you that's like, oh man, this is Neil Young. It's so weird. It's so freaky. It's so trippy.
Yeah, no, it's totally that exactly, where you're kind of like trying to just maintain yourself while you're having a conversation with them. And I'm sure that it's in their mind too. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm Bill Clinton and can keep a conversation and they were all intrigued, but I mean, it just felt like it was a kind of a slightly normal conversation, and that's why I liked it. That's why I think it was cool. I think I got to do the same thing with Elvin Jones, who just was kind of iconic and legendary to me, as well as just not just an influence, but just one of those handful of people in history that just kind of took things to a whole new level. You know, like, I'm sure if you met a, you know, somebody that you really just thought dominated, like a Bill Clinton or something in terms of conversation, but just to kind of dig inside of their brain and see what happens. But I've had many conversations, and I did have the opportunity with Elvin to just talk about stuff and see what makes them tick. And I think when they're really genuine and really real, it just makes them so much cooler, because they're in, like you said, that element where the superstars are just normal, they're friends and peers, but they're still nice and not like shut off and guarded, you know?
Well, and it's obviously on a very different scale, but the very last thing I want to do is sit around and talk to people about what I do and how I do and what the process is and what that feels like.
Yeah.
I've made that mistake before when I've met people that I really admire out of genuine sincerity, trying to kind of get an understanding of how they're able to do what they do. I did that with Gord Downie when I met him. I was kind of fan dude-ish, and it's really not my nature, but I just think he's such a riveting live performer. And I guess I was kind of genuinely keenly curious to find out what his process was. Like he has such peculiar moves on stage, as you know. I was like, so do you find a move that works and kind of do that for a few shows and then find something else, or are those kind of signature moves that you do all the time? Like, how does that work? And he kind of wasn't into it. And I don't blame him.
Yeah, I could see that.
I don't blame him at all, because it was A, none of my business, and B, a dumb question, and C,
well, he wouldn't know what to tell. Yeah, he wouldn't know how to answer that, right? He'd be like, I don't know, right? I just, whatever happens kind of happens.
Yeah.
In a sense.
And so it's more fruitful when you don't even cross that whatever celebrity barrier.
Yeah, right? Before you don't
say that.
Before we get to the next one, I had a similar experience with Garth Hudson.
I was hoping you were going to say Brooks.
Yeah, right. From Chris the band. Gaines. Garth Hudson from the band, who's like the, you know, wizard type keyboard legend that was always, you know, making that magical stuff.
And you nerded him out with your innate knowledge of his gear?
Everything. Just being a legend in his understanding of music and just what he could do to augment arrangements and stuff. But when I interviewed him, it's like it was always great talking when we were just shooting the shit about anything. But as soon as I started talking about, like, time, like, or the 60s or who he was with, he would just start shutting down and just wouldn't go anywhere. So it was like I had to keep kind of chipping tiny little bits away and hopefully have him, you know, bring the wording out or talk about stuff. But yeah, it's a tough process of conversation with those type of people, because sometimes they've been in that kind of lifestyle and they're just burnt out a little bit from it. Because imagine being, you know, backing Bob Dylan and getting booed every night.
Well, right. You know, it's also a hierarchical thing, right? Once you allow that these people are, you know, of interest to you or on a pedestal of some kind, then you've put them in an uncomfortable position where they feel like they kind of aren't equal somehow.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, what's who's next? Is it yours or mine?
Yeah, it's mine.
Okay.
I once got spit on by a camel. I briefly dated all the way with Stephanie K from Degrassi. I tried out for the boy band Soul Decision. Do you remember? Ooh, it's kind of crazy. I've been thinking maybe.
Yeah, you just brought it right back.
Kind of faded, but I'm feeling all right. Remember?
Were they Canadian?
Yeah.
Okay.
We were. I once got spit on by a camel in the face.
Once got spit, and Stephanie K?
I briefly dated all the way with Stephanie K from Degrassi.
Who
I tried
is that?
Out for Soul Decision.
Which one is Stephanie K?
Remember, Stephanie K was the girl that wore like heinous Christmas sweaters at home. And then as soon as she left home on her way to school, she'd take off the wool sweater, revealing a tank top and short shorts underneath. And her parents told her she shouldn't dress that way at school. So everybody at school deduced that she must be some type of hoe.
So it started
spreading around the school that you could go all the way with Stephanie K. But I think it was Degrassi Junior High.
Yeah, no, I remember now. I know what you're talking about. But I'm gonna say the lie is the Soul Decision. and the other two happened. What do you think?
Do you know what I did?
What?
I did one truth and two lies.
You did? Yeah. Oh, you mixed it up on. Yeah, you did. Flipped it.
There's only one truth in there.
Oh, okay. And that was the first thing you said.
Got spit on by a camel, yeah.
Yeah, of course you got spit on.
Well, by I camel. Botched that.
Of course you got spit on a camp.
In 1980-something, the circus came to Sherwood, Prince Edward Island.
Oh.
And I lived in the backyard of the field where the circus was. So I got up really close to the camels as they were grazing.
Ugh.
And a camel can spit, I think it's upwards of 70 miles an hour. And my head went back like JFK. Like, this thing burned.
And it was stings like a charcoal and smells bad, right? Loogie.
Yeah.
It stinks, right?
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't smell great. And it doesn't feel great. Your pride doesn't feel great. And it also hurts your face.
That's almost like when the guys threw the mustard ham sandwich at my dad from the van window. One day we were walking to baseball to go pitch, like practice in Toronto, and like when we lived in Weston Road.
And someone threw a sandwich at him?
These two punk asses were going like 80 kilometers an hour up the hill on Weston Road and like fired a sandwich out of the van and hit my dad in the face with a sandwich. And like the mustard and mayonnaise was like all up in his eyes.
It burned.
And he was fucking raging. He was losing his fucking mind. He was screaming, calling them warmongers. Where are those fucking war? And he's like getting my brother to try and get the car to go chase after them. And he got in the car and fucking I could hear him ripping around the neighborhood, like going crazy, and couldn't find them. And I knew we knew who it was, but we didn't want to tell him because we knew that he would fucking lose it and maybe kill them.
Driving but with mustard in his eyes.
Don't fuck with Ronnie. Don't throw a sandwich at Ronnie.
Were they throwing the sandwich out the window and it happened to hit him, or they were throwing it at him?
They were throwing it at him. They were like long haired punks, like, you know, fucking total just messing around.
Oh, like warmongers.
Yeah, like warmongers.
Total warmongers.
Total warmongers. Okay, so I'm going to go here to mine.
All right, hit me.
The last one.
And is yours two truths and a lie like it's supposed to be?
Yeah,
or is
this
it
is
one truth and two lies?
This is two truths and one lie.
Okay.
I've pissed on a sleeping friend. I've pissed on a guy's leg under a table in a bar. I've pissed on a rack of mink coats.
Wow.
I pissed on a sleeping friend. I pissed on a guy's leg under a table in a bar. And I pissed on a rack of mink coats.
Full disclosure, I know the mink coats is true.
Yes.
I know that's true.
You know the mink coats is true. Okay, so that's
off the table. I'm going to say the other truth is on a sleeping friend.
That's not true.
Really?
I would never do that. Yes.
But you would on a guy's leg under the bar?
Who was an asshole.
So he was not your friend?
A guy's leg under the table at a bar.
Who was
not
the
my
what?
Friend.
Okay. Start at we the start in, and don't we, leave out we, anything.
We were in Scottsdale, Arizona at some like dude bar, you know, like a place you would think that's in Scottsdale,
right.
Arizona.
At the Dirty Bro.
Yeah, well, not dirty. It was kind of like fake she trying to be hip,
yeah.
You know? So you had a bunch of like, you know, plastic kind of people and then these like bro dudes. And these bar stools, like, or the tables were high up. And these guys were so annoying and I got so drunk that I thought it would be funny to my buddy to be like, hey, check it out. Like under the table and pull out my pants down and piss like around the table on the floor and like on these guys' pants all over. My buddy's like looking down and it's like kind of going about their floor down and on their pants and up and on their pant legs, but kind of lightly, not too hard because it's a, you know, they're moving around. It's kind of a dancey place, but it literally pissing all over their legs.
You
and it was so ridiculous.
Are you fearless or are you just that wasted?
I was so drunk that I just thought it would be kind of funny and they didn't even notice. That's the crazy part.
Did that ever backfire on you?
That's the only time I ever did that. I would don't like these guys were just killing me with the doucheness, and I just was like, "Here's one for the guy that can't stand douche idiots."
And they didn't notice, obviously.
No, but I did it with my friend, and it was enough for me to let him see that it was going on.
Was he terrified?
Yeah, he was like, "You fucking can't do that."
Because bros travel in packs, and you could have been bros.
Yeah,
down.
Yeah, yeah. It was just a like total like it was. It was going to be me and him getting shit kicked outside by a bunch of guys with their hats backwards.
Now, in fairness, a lot of the urine incidents in your life happened before you quit drinking. So it's almost like it wasn't even you. It was a different time. But tell the mink coat story because it's outrageous.
Well, the mink coats is still one of those ones I have to be careful because I don't want to say where it was because they may or may not have the footage. But it was at a big party at a gala place. And, like, it was one of those, like, oh, man, I'm going to, you know, kind of go off this way to find a bathroom. And then I was like, what's this here? And I was just saw this massive, you know, ring of mink coats. And I was like, kind of that when in Rome met the you only live once, met the swinging on a chandelier, just all those things of the full on, like, Keith Moon-ness in my head.
That's rock and roll,
like,
man.
I got to do this. And Mike Smith, our friend, happened to be over there in the same vicinity. And so I went over and I opened the coats and put them around me. And I was like, ah. And then Smith was like, Taggart, what are you doing over there? And I'm like, ah. And he was like, he just couldn't bear to believe what was happening.
Mink coats.
Yeah. Like, and I looked at this price tags. They were all like over $15,000 a piece.
Wow.
It's insanity. I'm going to have to say this was in Los Angeles just to keep it real.
Sure.
Yeah.
And people who bought the coats would probably think that the it was aromatically authentic.
Yeah, these smell like they were just came from the place, the Trappers. Trapper John MD, Trapper Don JT.
Have you ever old school trashed a hotel room?
Only if I had like had a reason to. I never trashed a room other than like parties that were crazy, that like where like I had bad service to warrant some reasoning. But I remember one time we destroyed a few closets, and that kind of became like a thing, wrecking closets.
Like, you do chin-ups on the bar to deliberately break it?
It would be, like, to the point of, like, doing, like, fake, like, karate classes. You know, like, practicing karate chops into the, you know, going right through the doors.
I remember...
stupid. I remember one night in Montreal, it's always with those guys, the Trailer Park Boys were there. Rob, JP, and Mike. And we were, you know, those like little kind of slanted doors where they have like the, you know, 50 little pieces of wood you can see through them.
Yeah, 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 and like louvers.
We were like smashing through. Yeah, kind of like
on the back of a Smokey looking. And the Bandit Trans Am.
Yeah, and my friend Alex was doing this bit where it was like, what do you think you're doing? And it'd be like, he would go behind the thing and then we would break them. And then he would like say something like to reveal himself, like it was a skit. And then it just got to the point where he had to do it over and over. And we ended up like trying to fix the blinded, like the wood by like shitty glue and using like Bailey's to match the color back.
Oh my God.
It was pathetic, but it was just enough to get it fixed, you know, so you could check out and maybe a day or two you get away with it.
Hotel security guard must be a really thankless job.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Did you guys kick in the closet door? No, man. It was like that. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. You know, who threw the 4-foot potted plant down the stairs?
I don't know, man. It was like that when I got here.
I don't know. But it sure was loud, eh?
We'll take a break. We'll be right back on TNT.
Fucking right, eh?
Hey, Jonathan.
Yeah, bud.
Do you want to play Canadies 80s?
Yeah, I do. Anything with a name like that, I'm in.
What it is commercials from the 80s that are Canadian.
I'm in.
Classic.
Canadian 80s.
Yes. And I guess you don't necessarily have to guess it, but they're just, we're kind of reminiscing in a sense.
As we tend to do. If it's Canadian and it's more than 30 years old, that's our wheelhouse.
Absolutely. Because it takes us back, and it also just kind of replays a moment in history. Can I start with a classic Ontario Health campaign ad?
Sure.
1984.
I might not know it, but tee it up.
Yeah, this one is a beauty.
Dad, can you fix this?
Sure, buddy.
Uh-oh. It sounds banged up.
Not so good.
From bed. Now!
What's wrong with the old man?
He's a little bit banged up, and the kid tries to bring a toy to him, a toy car to fix, and he's all excited to do it, and it's basically a Dukes of Hazzard car with those little two prongs that are very simple to put the wheel onto. Uh-oh. And he can't figure it out, Jonathan. He's having a little bit of a problem. Let's just catch the little bit again here.
Is daytime banged up, or is it night?
Go to bed. Now! Are you sure your drinking isn't hurting?
He turns on him.
He really turns. Gives him a real heel turn all of a sudden towards the end. The kid is just traumatized. He has the car back in his hands, and the wheel is not on it still, and he's going to bed.
Now, the one thing I learned at Alateen, aside from you can't steal home playing soccer baseball, is that you can't phone in sick to work for an alcoholic. You have to let them hit rock bottom.
Yep, you gotta let dad find it on his own.
But dad goes from zero to Dixie in a nanosecond in that thing. Holy cow.
Yeah, he's
he's partying with the kid, and he just turns on him.
Yeah, he's ripping on some real deep, it's like a triple scotch. A lot of little rocks in there, for sure.
Backfilled with a rockaberry cooler.
Yeah, hey, do you got one, or do you want me to go with it?
Yeah, let me tee this one up. Yeah. Got this one for you. This was tugs at the heartstrings a little bit, but it's a theme we can all relate to. Take a listen.
Steve! Fred! John, come on! Fred! Mario! Tommy! Mike! Patrick, come on!
That's Albert!
Scott!
Yeah. Johnny's over at the picnic table. He's not even on the ice.
Yeah.
Guess it leaves Albert. Hey, he's your kid, brother. You take him.
I guess that leaves Albert.
Come on, Albert.
Nobody wants moldy old Albert. It's Canadian Tire.
Poor Albert. He gets shut right down, eh?
Here's the thing. They pick teams. They take everybody who's on the ice. And just because it's not bad enough, Albert's the only one left, the captain takes a guy sitting over on the picnic table who doesn't even have his skates on yet over Albert.
This is hard.
Albert's such a piece of garbage. We'd rather take Colin, who's still in his galoshes.
To be honest, I wish they'd show him skate first. You know what I mean? He's probably just all over the butter skates going all over the place.
He had the Micron plastic molded skates. He's an ankle skater,
and he looks like he's just kind of threw on the winter hunting cap that just happened to be in the closet.
Were you ever Albert?
Not really. I wasn't really Albert. I wasn't Albert, but let's move to mine. This is a classic eggs commercial from 1987. I think you might remember this one, John. This is a classic right here.
What an ill-judged, stupid whip person comes along and he goes, is this the way you want to turn?
Breakfast for dinner.
Eggs, dear.
After a hard day, over easy.
Do you remember that one?
No.
The raging dad coming home from work, talking about everybody at work, giving it to him, and then all of a sudden, she throws down some eggs and he's all set. Happy as a clam.
There's a common theme in your commercials so far.
What's that?
Angry dad getting talked down from the ledge.
Yeah, I think it's because I can see it in the house of the rage, the raging pops.
Anyway, I wish I could have been at that meeting where someone was like, here's the creative I'm thinking. You know, eggs. They're soothing. They're delicious. Here's what I'm thinking. A guy comes home. He's not that happy. Then he gets some eggs and he's happy. Who is the person sitting across from him that went, I'll sign on that. That sounds wonderful.
Well, I mean, we know how ad campaign creativity rooms can be. I've done a couple music commercials in my time, and I've been in those situations where it's like, but we were just starting talking about it, and it's already done, and get moving
signed,
on.
Signed, sealed, delivered. Because it's, the ad industry is at a weird time in its history because nobody watches commercials anymore, of course.
Totally.
So they actually go back and retroactively frame paint in product placement in some of your favorite old sitcoms. So there might be a Domino's pizza on the coffee table in the Friends living room that wasn't actually there when they shot it. It's wild.
That is crazy. Is that just like some beyond extra dollars on the side? Like another few deals? Oh, that'll be in syndication starting in 5 years, but we're going to keep
it
for the time
being.
It's like retro-additive.
Oh, man. I got one for you, bud.
Okay, hit me.
Feast your sound holes on this.
I am Ashtar, a robot from Planet Danger. I can put my arm back on. You can't. So play safe.
Do you remember Ashtar?
I remember Ashtar. That is that's a top five memory for sure. I think that was always on before Inspector Gadget or whatever in the morning. That is a classic.
He can put his arm back on, okay? You can't. So play safe. The log driver's waltz is popping up as a Canadian commercial.
That's a good one. Let's hear a little bit of that classic. That doesn't play anymore. You don't hear that one anymore, do you?
I don't know. Roots has a t-shirt this season that's a limited edition log driver's waltz t-shirt. And they also have one that's for the Shandai. Remember?
The
hockey sweater?
The jersey. Oh, of course. No, I remember that. That the Shandai was... they always would play them like at the ends of in-between commercials or in-between shows.
Yeah, interstitials.
Or late at night, and they would just come on, so you'd see them pretty much every, I don't know, 2-3 times a week, so they're cemented in our brains.
Same with Hinterland Who's Who. All right, take a listen to Log Driver's Waltz.
If you ask any girl from the parish around what pleases her most from her head to her toes, she'll say, I'm not sure that it's business of yours, but I do like to waltz with the log driver, for he goes burning down and down.
What a jam.
That's where the log driver learns to step lightly.
It's a great jam.
I think that's one of those songs you might hear like when you're on your way out, when you're dying.
Yeah, I might.
here's one that you might remember. Check this one out right here. Oh, here's a great ad. Retro Ontario.
Listen carefully. This man is using an amazing electronic breakthrough that lets him hear a pin drop across the room. It's the Whisper 2000. Gives you the astonishing experience of super hearing. No more embarrassing complaints when you watch TV.
He does the arm rip when he's watching the game.
Look, adjust the volume for your personal listening. With Whisper 2000, you don't have to turn up the volume.
No more fights with the kids when he's watching the Sunday game.
Adjust volume to hear better than anyone in the room. You can even hear a whisper 100 feet away.
Oh, there's the baby upstairs. No problem anymore.
You can hear it on the Whisper 2000.
pass.
Okay, we gotta hear that again.
Can you hear me back there?
I can't hear from back here. It's like, good luck talking to me right now. I am done. Right here, at the back seat of the car when it's a little loud.
Yeah.
He's just sitting there. He's just sitting there going, I can't hear you back from here. It is right here.
Back seat of the car. I can't hear from back here. Now sit back, tune in, talk comfortably.
Imagine. I'd love to see the raw tape of the auditions for that.
And he's like, he's got the big executive suit on, so it's like, we're trying to talk business, and good luck, bud. You're not going to get a job.
I can't hear you back here. I can't hear you back here.
And here he is at the movies with his wife.
In the back seat of the car. I can't hear from back here.
Oh, now sit back, but listen to his response.
Comfortably. Can you hear me back there? Loud and clear.
Use whisper. Wow. Loud and clear.
Oh, he's arguing with his wife, saying, man, what's he saying in this movie? What's going on? And his wife's like, Brenda, I love you. I love you. And he's like, ah, and he's losing the plot. People are upset. And then he has the... the 2000 on, and he's actually in the theater with headphones watching the film. And this is all pitching this thing.
The human ear.
Outside in the woods? Oh my god. Okay, the guy in the woods, he throws out, listen to what he says when he's listening, the guy in nature.
Awesome. Totally awesome.
Awesome. Totally awesome. So yeah, that's the Whisper 2000. That is a that's a classic. I don't know if it's Canadianity, but it is it's pretty
around
good.
The same time as the Clapper. Do you know what one I was trying to find and I haven't been able to find it on the internet? It's a Maple Leaf Foods commercial where a mom is cooking breakfast in the kitchen and she yells up like, "Time to come downstairs, Timmy." And there's no sign of Timmy. So she puts some maple leaf bacon in the frying pan. And suddenly Timmy appears with Bedhead in the kitchen. And she turns around and says, "Bacon gotcha."
Oh, really?
There was a whole campaign called Bacon Gotcha.
Bacon gotcha.
Where bacon would draw people out of their preoccupations.
I don't, I remember the commercial a little bit, but I don't remember the bacon gotcha.
Bacon gotcha, eh? How
it
Canadian
does.
Is that?
That's super, super Canadian. Maybe we can find that on Twitter if somebody can
maybe
call
some them. Of our listeners have a copy of Bacon Gotcha.
Yeah, don't forget, if you can find Bacon Gotcha on the internet, please send it to Taggart and Torrens on Twitter.
Hashtag Bacon Gotcha.
Gotcha.
Speaking of hashtags, let's talk about the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge for a minute. You did yours.
I did. I went up to Baysville to my mom and pop's place, and I did it with my dad and my brother, and my mom was filming, and it was kind of funny because the first time I did it, I went to Baysville and I got the three bags of ice, $9 at the local Baysville spot there, and I went
$3 a bag.
Hey, whatever, you know, it's good for the local economy, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah. So I put a floor tom I got that. That was a little different than a bucket. Took a head off the floor tom and filled it with water and ice, and it was super heavy, so I had to get my dad and my brother James to help, and they poured it on.
And they took great pleasure in doing that.
They did. It was super heavy, and poured it on me, and of course, the first time we did it, my mom forgot to press the record button.
No!
Yes. So I had to do it again. So that
were you soaking wet at the start of the second one?
No, I had to I got
full reset.
Yeah, full reset. So I had to get my extra clothes that I was going to wear the first time to do it, so I had no dry clothes after the second time, and I had to pick up ice off the grass, so it had a real kind of greasy edge to it.
There are, oh my gosh.
Yeah, there for are... sure, and it's only like 10 seconds, like, because my mom, like, only got a little bit. Of course, that's what happens when you put your social media into the hands of a 60-plus-year-old.
Get what you pay for, bud.
Yeah, for sure.
There are, is of course a great video going around of ALS Ice Bucket Challenge fails.
Yeah.
Where same thing, it's really heavy, so people lift it up and it lands on their own face, or it lands on their friend, or they slip in it, or fall in the lake, or whatever.
Yeah.
Did you happen to see Paul Bissonnette's ALS challenge?
Didn't he do it from like a helicopter or something ridiculous? Yeah, he
chartered a helicopter and got it to drop glacier water on him as he was standing on top of a mountain. You can't help but think that had he taken the money it cost to do it and just donated it to ALS, they might have been able to cure the thing.
Yeah.
It was obviously really entertaining, and he's funny.
Yeah, he likes to take it to the hilt.
Yeah.
As they do some, and those, the good old NHL boys like to party.
Yeah, they do. Like to get banged up.
Sorry, go ahead.
Speaking of Canadianity in the 80s.
Yes.
I told you I pried my wallet open and got a ticket to the Oilers home opener. It's Battle of Alberta against the Flames.
Awesome.
It's 1984 night.
No.
The entire team, like from Lee Fogelin to Randy Gregg, will be in attendance.
Come on.
Dave Semenko, Yari Curry.
No Wayne way. Gretzky,
Grant Fuhr, Andy Moog. Apparently the whole team's going.
I might have to come out there.
Charlie Huddy.
That's crazy. There's going to be
the Battle of Alberta.
There's going to be a party going on, man. Like hardcore. Those guys partied more than anybody. Now that they're going to go around, somebody might flatline for a few minutes.
Yeah, it's oil country, bud.
That is going to. Are you? You got all singing, all dancing. Are you all set?
Oh yeah. Well, I went on the StubHub. And it wasn't cheap, but by gum, I've never seen a game at Rexall, so I wanted it to be great seats. So I'm three rows behind the Oilers bench.
Yeah.
And going with my buddy Cody, and the seats are great. And I've been chatting with some of the Oilers administration folks, and sounds like going to get the whole deal.
We
get to meet all the folks.
We have to report this. If I can't get on that flight, we'll... you'll have to have a full report for the show.
Okay, deal. Do you ever go to Leafs games? Because those are pricey, right?
They are. I try to get to a game once in a while, but you know, it's busy with three kids, and like you said, it's like $500 to take the kids to go to a hockey game. So
it's a lot.
It's just you have to think twice about it, just with the realities of putting kids in school and roof on the house and all that stuff. But I try to get to one or two, but it's a grind on all fronts and expensive. So you could literally buy a great TV instead of going to one game.
Right.
I think we're just gonna not go to two games and get a 60-inch TV and put it in the basement. Might as well. Yeah.
Might as well, or 110er.
Yeah, 100. Well, that's if you're getting golds.
Well, 110 inch TV is like, isn't it like 100 grand?
No, are they? Are they that much? Oh, because it's the extra 10. No, now it's those big curved ones. Have you seen those?
Yeah.
Those ones are like 100 grand.
Man, who has a hundy to drop on a TV?
The same guy who has a milli to throw on a car.
I guess so.
And the same guy who has a billy to throw down on a sports team.
I guess
so. Or two billy. Two billy for the Cavs.
Let's go Halfers, bud.
Let's go Halfers. Let's take a break and come back on TNT.
Peace.
Where's my beer chair?
Well, hello there, JT.
How's it going, Jeremy?
Pretty good. I saw something funny at the beginning of TIFF here in Toronto.
What's that now?
The Tim and Eric show. Have you heard of that?
Oh, great. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And, Dr. Steve Brule. Have you heard of him?
I have.
The great John C. Reilly. I was, a friend of mine, JP Hassan, who's, JP Incorporated on Twitter and a famous, in my mind, he should be famous. He's hilarious, but a great comedian on in his own right from Seattle, now lives in Los Angeles. Anyway, JP hooked me up with tickets to the show, and I got to see John C. Reilly just kill it. I just thought it was incredible to see him perform in this character, and just the depth of his acting and humor, and just it was a great thing to see. And it was just
a nice thing, because I'm not a huge TIFF guy, but like it was kind of like the cooler version of what TIFF can be, I guess.
I'm not a huge TIFF guy either, and normally I find it a place where people gather to look over each other's shoulders at who might be better to talk to in the room.
For sure.
But yeah. Someone like John C. Reilly, that's an evening well spent. I had it in my mind that he was a dramatic actor. I know in recent years, like Step Brothers and what have you, he's done comedic stuff. But yeah. Didn't he start as heavy-duty drama guy?
Well, he can do both, yeah. I mean, I remember he was a great character in Magnolia. Remember he was the cop that lost his gun, I think he was.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was in Boogie Nights, right?
Yeah, he has like a great, great character actor, just and completely not what you'd think would be a funny, funny guy. But
although I saw a quote from Steve Carell today at TIFF, who was saying comedy and drama are a lot more, the stars are a lot more aligned than you might assume. And I actually prepare for a role the same way. It doesn't matter if it's comedy or drama.
Yeah, and you're seeing that with the, you know, that Rosewater movie that Jon Stewart directed, his debut is like getting the rave reviews, and it's completely the opposite of what you would think from someone who's started as a comedian. Jon Stewart, for sure. I mean, he's you know, we all love to see him spin things, but and have him talk about stuff. But just the fact that he's jumping behind the camera and killing it first time out with that Rosewater movie is pretty impressive.
Smart guy, and obviously a great storyteller.
And an old buddy, a good old pal. I used to chat with him on the phone and hang out with him back when he was doing his own show. I remember he used to tell me stories about like sitting in his office and hearing a ball getting bounced off the wall because he had an office in Tribeca, and it was De Niro just sitting in his office, you know, bored, bouncing a ball against the wall.
How did you and Jon Stewart ever meet?
We did the Jon Stewart show when he was on Fox back in the day when this was like 95 or something like that. And then he was just a big music fan. He came and saw us. I think we played at CBGB's, and we just kind of kept in touch. I remember I went to a bar with him and D.B. Sweeney. Remember that actor?
Of course.
And they were playing Quarters and getting just hammered and gunned. And that was kind of like, I guess, our bonding in a sense, the seeing him get completely wasted and just kind of keeping in touch. And he eventually came up and hosted an event for Our Lady Peace, like a radio show across the country. And
crazy.
He was really good to us and always was receptive when we asked for stuff as well. So I hope to see him again one day and say, hey, how's it going?
Because I know Jon Stewart from Stewiacke, Nova Scotia, but I think it's a different one.
Yeah, I would say probably, right?
Yeah.
Jeepers. Jon Stewart is a...
Well, it's Andrea's cousin.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Do you know that one?
No.
Well, Andrea, now she would be the second cousin of your Uncle Kyle's wife, Teresa.
Now I'm really in this one.
That's how maritime conversations go.
Every single time, it's just everybody's related.
Yeah, where are you from, Dartmouth? Oh, wow. Yeah, but where's your father from? Well, he was from Sydney. Did he live near the Home Hardware? Yes, he did. Oh, so he must know Tim.
Yeah. Yeah, but the thing about it is they eventually start tracking down and knowing somebody that you know.
Here's my pitch, though. It's a documentary called Hello, We're Jon Stewart, where you fly in all the Jon Stewarts from North America, get them together in an arena, because there's probably that many of them.
Yeah.
And definitely. They have nothing in common except the most intimate thing about you, which is your name.
That's good stuff.
I get the sense. I think you're saying that, but I think you don't think that.
I'm saying let's wrap this up on the TNT this week, because that was a great episode, wasn't it?
Hey, it's always a pleasure chatting, bud, and I look forward to talking to you again next week.
I'll talk to you soon, JT.
Do me a favor.
What's that?
Take care, bud.
Would you like some egg and beans? Fuck off! You're not my mom!